This week on Black Diplomats, we're talking about the very difficult subject of sexual violence civilians face from Russian troops during the war. Much of the news on Ukraine is focused on the $60-plus billion in military aid Ukraine is expecting after nearly 6 months of infighting in Congress, and rightfully so. But mental health workers are fighting another battle in Ukraine that deserves just as much attention. Ukraine's Prosecutor General's Office has recorded nearly 300 cases of sexual violence committed by Russian forces since the beginning of the full-scale war in 2022, according to the Kyiv Independent. But that number is likely much higher. On today's episode, I speak with Nadia Volshinska, co-founder of Silny, a charitable fund that provides free assistance to people who survive sexual violence. They have a staff of 18 women, including volunteers and co-founders. Natalia's going to talk about what it's like to treat the men, women, and children who survived these horrific crimes. This is a very tough subject, and some of the stories may be distressing, so viewer and listener discretion is advised. All right, so Nadia, I want to thank you for coming on the podcast, because this is a very difficult topic, sexual assault that's taking place during the war. And I think that our audiences here in America needs to know more about what's happening with the war besides what's happening on the battlefield. So before I get into the questions that we're going to talk about, I just want to ask you, how are you feeling personally? Let's just start there.
Okay.
The first one, thank you so much for the opportunity to speak up, and thank you for having me today, because this is a really important topic that a lot of people need to hear about. I am a psychotherapist with over 14 years of experience, and my personal story with war started in 2014, because originally I was born in Donetsk, and when the Russia invaded Ukraine for the first time, I had to leave my hometown and to start over again. So this is really personal for me as well, like the whole war.
Але здебільшого я вже звикла.
But I'm used to it.
So let's start off with how soon after the Russian invasion did you begin hearing stories about sexual assault by Russian soldiers against Ukrainian civilians? And I'm speaking to 2022, but if you want to go back to 2014, when the first invasion started, you can go there as well.
Я думаю, будемо говорити про 22-й рік. Здебільшого,
I would probably start from the 2022, and I would like to mention that when the full-scale war started, we have a very strong volunteer community of psychotherapists and psychologists that were ready to provide help and to, you know, to make something useful for the people. And that's why I want to mention that in this community, we know about the sexual assault cases before the Kyiv region was liberated.
Тобто ці люди була можливість зв'язуватись, особливо на початку окупації.
When the Kyiv region was occupied, we for some time in the beginning we have an opportunity to communicate with the people that was living under occupation, and we know we were providing them some, you know, assistance via phone, like how to get some medicine or how to help yourself in different cases, or it was the beginning of spring, so it was really cold, and people do not have any heating in their buildings. They were living basically in basements, and you know, it was a hard time. So we were giving them advices how to keep warm, and basically we were communicating a lot with doctors, and doctors were providing those advices to those people. And the first like people who get to know about those sexual assault cases were the doctors, and they after they know that, they come to the psychologist and psychotherapist, so we can also provide them some help remotely.
Але звичайно про масштаб самого сексуального насилля ми почали дізнаватися.
But at that time, when Kyiv region was still occupied, we didn't know about how many cases of sexual assault we had. So we only know about few of them. But after the Bucha, Irpin, and other regions were liberated. Yeah, Borodyanka. After those regions were liberated, we starting to hearing stories from survivors, and we also had a lot of cases when about sexual assault when sexual assault was reported by witnesses that was watching those crimes.
Yeah, I want to ask you something, because I'm interested in what happens when you get this information as a psychotherapist, because you are the person that the person who's assaulted goes to the doctor, then the doctor reaches out to you, and then how do you deal with the person or support the person when they're currently under occupation? That has to be very difficult.
Звичайно, коли люди знаходились під окупацією, вони, якщо в них була можливість, якщо їм
дозволяли. Of course, when people who were living under occupation and they had an opportunity to use their mobile phone on, or they have like some mobile connection and they can use it. Of course, the first thing they do, it wasn't to, you know, contact a psychologist or tell about their stories, what they have experienced. Basically, they used those opportunities to communicate with close ones, or to, you know, find some news about what is happening around and anything like that. But they were talking to their relatives or friends about the experience they had, and those relatives and friends comes to us and ask for help, how we can help those people. But and also I want to mention that for those people who were living under occupation, sexual assault, it wasn't the biggest problem, because they experienced a lot of other urgent problems that they have to deal with. But if a person, like a relative or a friend of a survivor, came to us, we were giving them some guidance or how to act, or how to provide some first medical aid for yourself when you just experience a sexual assault, or if this sexual assault was continuing for some period of time, like for a week or for a month. So how the person should act to fight with the perpetrator or anything like that. So we were basically giving them some advices how they can survive.
How old were the youngest survivors, and How old were the oldest survivors?
For now, if we are talking about our foundation experience, we are providing help to people, to teenagers that are above the age of 16. This is a legal requirement in Ukraine for those who are for the organization that are providing anonymous or confidential psychological support. But when the war, when the full-scale war started, we have some cases that parents reach out to us, parents of children that experience sexual assault, and they were. At that time, they were like 8 or 9 years old. We also had a couple of cases, teenagers were reaching to us and they were like 12 years old. And the oldest survivor is at that time was 59 years old.
Okay, so do you continue to support people who are still in occupied territories?
It's a hard question because we have limited abilities to provide help for a person that is still living in danger. Yeah, and there are a lot of risks that this person can experience the sexual assault again in the occupied territories. So we have a very limited possibilities to support them, and this help won't be as effective as we wanted. What we are doing when the person that is still living under occupation is reaching out to us, the first is that we are trying to find some organization that helps to leave the occupied territories and that help to find the safest way to do that for this person. And this is also because if a person like living under occupation for more than 2 years, most likely they will need also a medical assistant, medical support. And this is not something that we can provide remotely. And to provide our help like ethically, right, we are trying to do everything for that person to leave the occupied territories and come back to Ukraine. And in Ukraine, we can do, we can provide the help this person needs. We can provide some psychological consultation to those people, but it is not effective because if a person still living under occupation, as I mentioned before, there is a high risk that they can survive this assault again. And so we are aware that if we provide some psychological assistance, psychological therapy, the person that receives it and their mental health is stabilized, and after that they experience sexual assault again, and after other experience, they still come back to us and they received psychological support and they still are living in danger. So it can lead to like cycle where a person starts to believe that this terrible experience that that she or he are experienced, it's normal, and they do not like understand that this is not okay, and you know, they are if it's clear to you what I'm trying to translate. So
It's clear. It's clear. Yeah. But I want to ask you, how much of this, like you just mentioned to me now, did you have to learn now in lifetime during the war? I'm sure that so much of this is very different from talking to a person who survived sexual assault, but not in a war zone.
As in every person that faced the war in the 21st century, we have to learn a lot and to be flexible and to adapt to this reality that we have for now. And we are learning constantly, and there are a lot of guidance are writing right now about a postponed grief, or what is the advantage of a dissociation in some people that surviving some kind of trauma. But we need to understand that sexual assault is something that is going together with any type of war conflict or war in history. The one thing that we learned is that when Russian soldiers do not have any victories on the battle zone and they have to leave our territories, it's not fight, yeah, but they start to fight with civilians, they start to sexually assault them. There are a lot of they are trying to, to have a revenge on the civilians because they can't have some victories on the battlefield. So this is something that we learned, that if some territories are liberated, we are 100% sure that there are some cases of sexual assault, and we saw it in Kyiv region, we saw it in Kharkiv region, and we saw it when some part of the Kherson region was liberated as well.
Wow. I think about my country's recent approval of military aid to Ukraine, which is very positive for Ukraine. But I never connected the victory on the battlefield with soldiers taking revenge by sexually assaulting the civilians. I don't think many people draw these connections. With a military victory comes someone's personal pain in many instances.
Yeah, because the sexual assault is not committed by the person that are in their power state. The sexual assault is committed by a person that are weak, and they are trying to, as you said, take revenge on using civilians. Or we can also talk about people that are in captivity. So a lot of Russian military forces, or they also are torturing our people that are in captivity. So this is also from a position of weak people.
We usually think about women in instances of sexual assault. Do you also talk or support men?
Звичайно.
Of course, we are providing help for men, and we have a couple, a few cases in our foundation with a man who's experienced sexual assault, but it's not something that men often talk about, and there are less cases of when men reached out for help, when men seeking help after they survived sexual assault. And in Ukraine and in other countries, is still worse if you're a man and you survived sexual assault than if you're a woman and you survived the sexual assault. So that's why men are not seeking help. And we do not know how many cases there are of sexual assault against men.
Але ми точно знаємо, що такі випадки, вони частіше відбуваються в полоні. І ми точно знаємо, що дуже часто мотивацію про звернення за допомогою в наш конкретно фонд.
From our experience as a foundation, we have a couple of cases with men after sexual assault, including sexual assault in captivity. But these people are not seeking for psychological support. They are seeking for medical support because this sexual assault leads to some medical problems. And it's a big issue for us because those men are willing to, you know, to receive some help, some medical help, but they are not willing to receive like psychological support. And they are not like speaking out about their experience. They are not mentioning it. And they start talking about that and, you know, seeking psychological help. When there is a complex PTSD that does not allow them to live their normal lives. So this is the only like way they start seeking psychological support.
How does Ukrainian society talk about this subject, about sexual assault survivors during the war? Because like many countries in the world, sexual assault occurs outside of war zones, but in general, do you feel like Ukrainian society discusses this issue enough?
Basically, I want to start talking about like the global perspective on that, because we know that sexual education or protecting sexual assault survivors is something that appears in like global trends. It appears like 10 or 15 years ago. For example, we didn't know about sexual assault in marriage. So, of course, Ukraine is not a country with some strict like patriarchy rules, and of course women have a lot of rights in Ukraine, but if we are talking about Me Too movement in the USA or Europe, in Ukraine we also have some initiatives and campaigns as a result of this global movement, but it wasn't something like massive or widely spread in Ukraine.
I am interested in the support that organizations like yours get or don't get, because we talk about all the aid, military aid that goes to Ukraine and that there's not enough, but we rarely talk about organizations like you that do the work of helping sexual assault survivors. That's something that a Patriot missile or an Abrams tank can't solve.
Розумієте? Це може бути не дуже гарна відповідь, ти можеш це так перекласти.
Yeah, it might be not a good answer to your question, but some like patriots and other like missiles are something that could solve this problem, because the most cases of sexual assault are committed in occupied territories, and the main like goal for us is to liberate our territory so Russian soldiers do not have possibility to sexually assault our people. And this is something that we should do as a civilians, but the main goal is to liberate our territories and to fight the enemy on the battlefield.
Так, бо мені набагато легше працювати психотерапевтом, коли в мене є
And I also want to mention that it's much easier to provide psychological support and to work as a psychotherapist when we have like electricity, when we are not, you know, surviving other like missile attack or any other terrible thing that we are experienced, even living in like peaceful cities. And for example, the psychologists that are working in Nava Foundation, they provided consultation using Starlink when we have blackouts and last year. And for us to do our like civilian work and to provide support for civilians, it's easier to do that in peaceful times, not in a wartime.
Ну, я думаю, що навіть в дуже великій темі безсилля, бо будь-яка жахлива подія, вона в тебе викликає відчуття того, що ти не
можеш. Ти точно when we are talking about war, and war is something that you cannot control and you cannot predict. So you are living in a constant feeling that you don't have power and control over your life. And the main thing in my work as a psychotherapist and as a patient, as a client as well, is to find some small thing that you can do in your life that creates that you can control, and there is in your life or something else besides the war and the work and all of the terrible stories that you are hearing every day.
І оце розуміння, що дійсно ти не можеш змінити жахливі події.
And it's also important to not put your life on stop and to do something to you know, for example, if you feel that you can't change it on you, or you feel that you are powerless, so you need to do something, for example, to help some people or to find some ways to you know, to be involved in the, like to volunteer or something. And these small steps allows you to still have some life and to still, you know, enjoy your life and do not waste those years.
Yeah. So tell me if you know of people who are psychotherapists that have stopped doing this work because it's just too much for them. Have you heard of those cases, and does it happen?
Ну, в мене специфічна тусовка, в мене дуже багато.
Okay, so в my community and my like colleagues and friends that I'm actively communicating with, they are from Donetsk and Luhansk, so they have seen a lot in their life, and they are, you know, they are resilient on those topics, and they can work a lot with this terrible experience.
Але це більше як це більше, звичайно, це є в цьому і частина жарта.
And I want to emphasize that if the psychologist is stopping their work, their practice for a year or a couple of months, it's not a bad thing. It's really a very ethical decision, because if they don't have the ability to provide, you know, the services they want to provide, so it's a right decision to stop their practice. And but in the other hand, some psychologists are very motivated, and they feel they are very motivated when they are helping other people, and this sense of you know, of responsibility, it's something that are keeping them in a good mental health state, and they have the ability to work and to provide help even in this terrible terrible reality.
Але звичайно, я знаю терапевтів, які не змогли.
So, but of course, I know some therapists that stopped their work as a psychotherapist, and they, for example, started doing social work or any other work that is connected, but it's not directly connected with the therapy or any other ways that where they actively working with people.
Okay. Oh, okay. So tell me about Silny, your organization, and Silny means strong, and why you decided to co-found the organization, and what does it, what, why did you start it?
The main reason that the foundation was created is because I met the Irina Vyshinska, the other co-founder of the Silly Foundation. If I met her like in 2014, so probably we established the foundation in 2014 when the first invasion started. And I also want to add that Russian military forces crime in Ukraine, especially about sexual assault crime, this is not that was widely speaking about in 2014, but we started Western media starting to communicate that so actively in 2022.
Ніби взагалі світ знав.
So it looks like the whole world get to know about everything that Russia done to Ukraine in 2022.
І звичайно, знаходити волонтерів, шукати.
And because of that, because a lot of people starting speaking about these crimes and it was a huge historical event at that time. It was easier for us to fundraise money for providing help. It was easier for us to to create a community of volunteers that was able to help us in providing help and to help us establish a foundation.
Ну і тому, що коли 22-й рік стався, коли війна
повноцінно. And when the full scale war started, I have to decide what will be my journey in this war and what can I do during that period. How can I be useful for people and for the state in that period?
Okay, so one, how do you feel about the fact that people did not really think about this issue of sexual assault in 2014 in the way that they think about it now in 2022?
Не було Бучі, Ірпеня.
If we are talking about sexual assault in 2014 and sexual assault in 2022, it was, we had a lot more cases of sexual assault. And in some point, it becomes something that we couldn't ignore and we couldn't, stay aside of that. And we have to somehow be involved in that and do something about that.
Okay, and I want to close out by asking you about the future and particularly your work. In our conversation, you emphasize guns, right? So, and how important it is to liberate the rest of your territory so that these people can get help, right? How important is it for America to continue supporting Ukraine militarily and also Europe if you could talk to the leadership of the United States and Europe who make these decisions, in your role, what would you tell them?
Це якесь таке питання не до психотерапевта, якщо чесно.
To be honest, it's not something that a psychotherapist should answer.
Ну, тобто, можливо, ти переклади мені, можливо, я не дуже зрозуміла, але він прям питає, яку роль. Мені здається, що Україна зараз закриває таку дирку, з якої, я не знаю, зло лізе. От така, мабуть, в нас роль, якщо чесно. Якщо зараз знати,
but to be honest, I think that for now we are closing the gates to the hell, and our people are closing, you know, the hole where all the or where our people are closing the hole where evil comes from.
Це може бути пафосно якось, але ну можна. Можна побачити, ну, в нас зараз ера
інтернету. It can sound a bit sophisticated, but we all have access to the internet and we all can see what is happening on the front line and what is happening in the occupied territories with people that are still living there.
Yeah, I'm really thankful for you talking to me because this is one part of the war that we in America almost never hear about, and I just want to thank you and your organization for this work that you do. I like to think about it as the Lord's work, you know?
Так, але я, мені важко говорити, що це є... Мені важко говорити на цю тему, що я бачу, що я бачу в цьому якесь...
Thank you so much for an inviting, and thank you so much for giving us a platform to speak and to tell about our experience. But I want to comment on that you said that we are doing the Lord's work. It's hard for me to talk about because I know all of the terrible things that are happening to people on the front line and under occupation. And I'm sorry, but I do not think that this is something that Lords know about.